1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard with the stories behind history's greatest rock albums. Today, in the studio, it's the anniversary of the breakthrough album that gave Kansas classic rock statehood.
And I know you got me going, yeah. Pardon me, my feelings are showing. I'm only saying what's on my mind. Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
There was kind of a magic feeling around the recording of Left Overture that years later, as we recorded our subsequent albums, we kept seeing, what was it we did that made this come out that way? And you know, I really think we went back to the same studio, we used the same place, the same people, and we weren't able to recapture that. So I attribute it to the songs. Hi, this is Kerry Livgren.
Hi, this is Phil Ehart.
Hi, this is Steve Walsh of the band Kansas.
This is Richard Williams with the band Kansas in the studio for the Left Overture 40th anniversary.
In the early 1970s, the style of music which came to be known as progressive rock was played predominantly by English and some German bands, such as Yes, King Crimson, and Genesis, experimenting with complicated arrangements and sounds that, at times, had as much to do with classical music as it did with rock and roll. It wasn't until the mid-1970s that American bands began to follow suit, and one of the most successful American progressive rock bands ever is Kansas. But their commercial breakthrough didn't come until their fourth album, entitled Left Overture, and released in October 1976. Kerry Livgren, one of two lead guitarists back then, a keyboard player and the main songwriter on the album Left Overture, has been reported as saying that the band's hometown of Topeka was a place with no real musical tradition of its own, so that when the members of the band Kansas were growing up there in the 1960s, they were open to music from every other place. Here's former member Kerry Livgren with me in the studio.
Well, we were totally receptive to outside influences. You know, people say the world is a global village. Well, that's absolutely true. Topeka, Kansas, because it's in the middle of wheat farmers in the Midwest, doesn't mean we're not exposed to every kind of music you can get any kind of music anywhere in the country. You could live in Cody, Wyoming and go in a record store and buy the same things you buy in New York City. Maybe not quite the variety, but nevertheless, we were exposed to all different kinds of music, and people assumed that because we were from Kansas, that we should be a fiddle band, or I don't know what they thought we should have sounded like, but we were a product, and all artists are a product to one degree or another, or what they listen to at an early stage and what they're exposed to. And we heard all kinds of British rock, you know, everything from Cream to King Crimson, and we incorporated that in our music, and we heard ZZ Top and incorporated that in our music. And I mean, we were a little of all those things. And that's true of anybody. The one thing that was, I think, important was that we didn't really try to duplicate them. We emulated all those things. We put all those things in a big blender and turned it on high speed. Above all, we wanted to be original. We really wanted to have our own sound, which I think we did.
Better now that I'm looking back and seeing.
life, and I know it never will be the same. You made me love you, now I'm home once again. No, I never wanna leave you no more.
Kansas did What's on My Mind, written by Carrie Livgren, on their October 1976 album Left Overture. The band lineup back then also included lead singer and keyboard player Steve Walsh, drummer Phil Ehart, who remains to this day, bass player Dave Hope, guitarist Richard Williams, also still an original, and the violinist and vocalist then was Robbie Steinhardt, whose father was a musicologist at Kansas University, specializing in Renaissance period music. Now, that sounded a long way from She Loves You, Yeah, 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 so I asked former member Robbie Steinhardt about his musical roots before joining the band Kansas.
I don't know if you'd call them roots or not. I mean, I kept trying to pull them up. it was like my parents, it was like pulling teeth to get me to practice a half an hour a day, so... But my father was the chairman of the Music History and Literature Department at Kansas University for many years. And that's in Lawrence, Kansas. That's where I grew up. It's about 35 miles from Kansas City. Kansas or Missouri, take your pick. There's just a line between them. Both my folks played piano, and my dad plays played all the instruments because he had to be a full professor. To have a PhD, you have to play everything. So
really?
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Or just you'd have to dabble, just a little bit of dabbling there.
I don't think I could imagine your dad playing drums. Did he play drums at all?
Neither.
On a set of drums, just kicking butt on that?
No, he used to do traps all the time.
Yeah, he did a lot of traps. Creams.
There's the key.
He loved Ginger Baker's solo. His
father played traps like Ginger Baker.
Mama sang bass. Yeah,
Mama sang bass. That's what I was thinking. Daddy played traps.
That's great. But yeah, so, I mean, you see, there was. Nothing going on, really, until I was about, I don't know, 2020, I guess, when I'd given up my instrument entirely, when I got out of high school and saw Easy Rider and decided to get blown away, so I went and buy a shotgun, so I went to New Orleans for grins.
Supposed to buy a chopper.
The chopper thing, yeah. Well, I wanted that, but too much money. But didn't realize until I started playing violin in the band that I actually wanted to do something with it, so... It was all kind of a mistake. It was like that I ended up here, which was a great mistake.
Yeah.
Best one I ever made.
By 1976, Kansas had already released three albums, and while their second, Song for America, had shown a lot of growth, their third, 1975's Mask, had actually sold fewer copies, although it's a great album. And none of those first three Kansas albums contained anything resembling a hit. The band was running out of time to find an audience. Here's lead guitarist Richard Williams, followed by lead singer and keyboard player Steve Walsh of Kansas.
One record was great. I mean, that's more than we ever hoped for. So if three was it, we would have still just kind of kept playing, I guess. The fear of having the deal jerked out from under you is probably, that's kind of built into your senses anyway. That's always there.
It's just that at that point, we had relied on each other so long and been entrenched in each other's lives for what seemed like forever at that time, that we couldn't even imagine not doing what we were doing. And so by hell or damnation, we would have done it. I mean, there would have been another album by us in some shape or form. It just happened to be on the same label.
But Kansas drummer Phil Ehart felt that the facts of their situation just prior to recording the Left Overture album were much more dour than that.
Because as an opening band, we made $750 a night. And the more we toured, the more we went in debt. And by the time Left Overture hit, Carry On Wayward Son hit, we were approximately $175,000 in debt. Because it cost us more to get to the gig to open for Mott the Hoople or to open for the Kinks or to open for Bad Company or Queen or whatever. It cost us more to get there than we were paid. So we were constantly in debt. So it's a good thing that we did have a hit, or we would have all been in debtor's prison of some sort.
So where does a progressive rock band from Topeka, Kansas, that's $150,000 in debt, go to record their fourth and maybe final album? Here's Kerry Livgren.
In the middle of a swamp. It was literally in the middle of a swamp. You could walk out of the studio and there were gators, you know, and mosquitoes the size of B-52s and stuff. It was really an unusual experience. We used to have armadillos walk into the control room and stuff. It was an interesting place to record. It was a great place to record in a way. We were isolated and we were there to work.
Kansas with another great song from Left Overture called Opus Insert from October 1976. I've got great news. Kansas' first studio album in 16 years, called The Prelude Implicit, contains 10 new tracks, from the melodic grandeur of With This Heart to the progressive rock majesty of Visibility Zero, and it's available now at Amazon.com. Coming up next, songwriter Carrie Lipgren shares the inspiration behind two songs on the Left Overture album that will change his band members' fortunes, and the other that will have eternal consequences for him. I'm Red Beard, in the studio for the anniversary of Left Overture by Kansas.
Hi, this is Carrie Livgren.
Hi, this is Phil Ehart.
Hi, this is Steve Walsh.
This is Richard Williams with the band Kansas in the studio for the Left Overture anniversary.
And I'm Red Beard. In addition to some intricate melody lines and arrangements, many of Carrie Livgren's songs for Kansas on Left Overture dealt with spiritual themes, the question of mankind's place in the universe. Probably the best example is Livgren's song, The Wall.
The Wall was an intensely personal song for me. I remember when I wrote that song, my parents would go to work during the day, and I'd go out of my basement where the piano was, upstairs where my dad had a Lowry organ that had this one setting that sounded like a big pipe organ or something, and the sound of that organ caused me to write in a little different vein than I might have with a guitar or a piano. But The Wall, lyrically, I guess represented, maybe better than any song I've ever written at that point in time, my personal spiritual longing to really find an answer to life and who we are and why we're here and all that kind of stuff. And I felt like at that time I was just up against this invisible, impenetrable wall that wouldn't let me get any further or wouldn't let me get any closer to that. And it was a very intense, almost Wagnerian kind of a scenario with that song, and it would have lent itself well to that kind of a music. So the marriage of the music and the lyrics on that song, I think, really, really worked well.
The path that I have chosen now has led me to a wall. And with each passing day, I feel a little more like something dear was lost. It rises now before me, a dark and silent barrier between all I am and all that I would ever want to be. It's just a travesty, towering, marking off the boundaries my spirit would erase. To pass beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak, and those of you who've seen it through, to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting, like a maiden that is soon to be a bride. The weight of indecision's in the air, standing there, symbol and the sum of all that's me. It's just a travesty, towering, blocking out the light and blinding me. I wanna see. Cast a spell, it's not for me, I know it well. The riches
dreams that I see are waiting on the other side. There's more than I can measure in the treasures of
I think I put up the wall and looking back on it. I was a very philosophical, mystical, religious pilgrim, I guess would be the best way to describe myself. And I went through a period in my life where I was just, the guys used to say I was the charter member of the Religion of the Month Club. You know, I would just go from one thing to another. And in 1979, I became a Christian. And at that point, I consider that wall to have tumbled down. And found everything that I was looking for.
Just as his spiritual epiphany would change everything in Carrie Livgren's personal life, another song that Carrie wrote for Left Overture would change the lives of everyone in the band Kansas.
And I was sitting at home. My dad had bought me a piano at a garage sale, and I was living in my parents' basement because we were so poor we had nowhere else to live at the time. My dad bought me this old piano, and it was down in the basement, and I sat down there and I started playing the song. I thought, man, this is kind of neat, you know, and I kept working on it, and it turned into Wayward Son. And I came in the last day of the rehearsal, and I thought, the guys are going to hate me. But I said, guys, I said, I got one more song, and I think we ought to listen.
Kansas drummer Phil Ehart.
When we did go do Left Overture, we had practiced up in Topeka, getting ready to go to Bogalusa to record, Bogalusa, Louisiana. Carrie walks in on the last day. I mean, I'm breaking down my drums, packing them up, and Carrie goes, I've written one more song for the album. I don't know if you guys are interested in doing it, but I'd like to at least try. Once we get down, we don't have time to rehearse it here, but let's rehearse it when we get to Bogalusa. And I said, well, okay, does it have a name? And he said, yeah, it's called Carry On Wayward Son.
And so I played it for him, and everybody's kind of looking at each other, yeah, this is maybe happening. And we didn't even have time to learn the song. So we went down to Bogalusa, Louisiana, where we recorded, and somewhere along the line we made the decision, yeah, we pulled something else off the album and put this song on. And we literally learned Carry On Wayward Son almost as we were recording it. And once we stood back and listened to it, we began to realize the song was moved not only onto the album, but to the front. It was like the opening cut, and it turned out to be our first hit. So it was kind of a good thing I brought it up at the last moment.
Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
We'll be right back. above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond this illusion. I was soaring ever higher, but I flew too high. Though my eyes could see, I still was a blind man. Though my mind could think, I still was a madman. I hear the voices when I'm dreaming. I can hear them say, carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Original Kansas lead singer and organ player Steve Walsh.
One thing that it was about Wayward Son is we all liked it. We all liked the song and gravitated toward it. So that the concept of writing a hit single or coming up with a hit single, we had been beaten up over the head for the past three albums. You guys have got to come up with a hit single. And so the next album had come along. Now you've really got to come up with a hit single. Well, this album, Left Overture, we all liked the song, so we dismissed it. We didn't think it had a chance in hell because we liked it so much that it, too much to be a hit single. Mm. Little did we know. I can still remember the people that handled all the accounting and everything. I called them because at the time, I think we were, you know, right before Wayward Son hit, we were all
on, I don't know, some kind of salary from the band. And we all got like $75 or $100 a week. And then I started to hear Wayward Son on the radio and understand that we were a bit more successful. I had no idea how well it was doing. And I remember calling them one day and saying, is there any way that we can get maybe $150 a week, you know, instead of $100 or $125? Mm. And they said, well, you know, you can have a lot more than that if you want. And I said, what? You know, this was so, oh boy, I mean, it was a wonderful feeling. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
That was original singer Steve Walsh, who will return with Phil Ehart and Kerry Livgren to debate the curious critical response to Left Overture's over 4 million in sales. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of Left Overture by Kansas.
Hi, this is Kerry Livgren.
Hi, this is Phil Ehart.
Hi, this is Steve Walsh.
This is Richard Williams with the band Kansas in the studio for the Left Overture anniversary.
Thanks again, guys. I'm Redbeard. The remastered Left Overture album by Kansas sounds amazing. And Kerry Livgren, the Kansas guitarist, keyboard player, songwriter who has left the band, Kerry believes that it's no accident that time has been kind to their effort 4 decades ago.
One thing about Kansas, we always looked at an album as an absolute total package. I mean, we didn't just make music and then hand it over to somebody else and be done with it. We were totally personally involved with our album covers, with everything that was, all the text that was on the album covers, everything that was said, the comments, the liner notes, both sides of the cover, the inner sleeve. We were always in on the design of that, the sequencing of the songs, everything about the album we saw as a thing that ultimately we wanted to be responsible for. And that was just one case where it all really worked. It all fell into place. There was kind of a magic feeling around the recording of Left Overture that years later, as we recorded our subsequent albums, we kept seeing, what was it we did that made this come out that way? And, you know, I really think we went back to the same studio. We used the same place, the same people. And we weren't able to recapture that. So I attribute it to the songs. The songs themselves were structured in a way that allowed the instruments to sound good. It was a good lesson in production, really. I think it was kind of accidental. It wasn't something that we knew to do beforehand. It was just kind of the way they turned out. And Miracles Out of Nowhere was a song that was, you know, wide open for everything to sound good in. It was a song that allowed for a lot of different musical textures within the framework of the same song. And it just really worked.
Yeah. sang this song 100, maybe 1,000 years ago. No one ever listens. I just play and then I go. Tell me what you're gonna do. Here I am, I'm sure to see a sign. All my life I knew that it was mine. It's always here, it's always there. It's just love and miracles out of nowhere. Love and miracles out of nowhere. Out of nowhere.
Kansas did miracles out of nowhere from the 1976 Left Overture album. When Carry On Wayward Son crossed over from FM rock stations to top 40 hit radio, the Left Overture album went top 5 in sales, eventually selling over 4 million copies. A curious thing happens when a band gets popular without the rock critics first anointing them. The rock writers, who had pretty much simply ignored Kansas' first three albums, well, they now had to pay attention, and it wasn't flattering. Kerry Livgren thinks that it was because the critics simply could not accept the idea of a progressive rock band coming from a place like Topeka, Kansas.
The fact that I think that we were an American band that in a lot of ways emulated the progressive rock of from England was something that really bugged a lot of American critics. You know, they tend to love the American favorite bands, and you know, personally, I didn't care where somebody came from. If I liked their music, I liked their music, and what influenced me, and we were as from Kansas in the Midwest as you can get. But they thought, well, you shouldn't sound like that if you come from Kansas. So they didn't like that, and apparently, people didn't seem to care because we sold millions of records anyway.
Current Kansas drummer Phil Ehart, followed by former singer and keyboardist Steve Walsh.
Well, at this time, Carrie's at full gallop. Okay. Kerry wrote the majority of Left Overture. The band is probably at its tightest. The band is really a band. Kerry was the musical leader, but there was no leader in Kansas at the time. We had six guys and there were six leaders, and it was very tough to work with because you had nobody really guiding where the band was going. It was just like everybody just kind of went along, you know. Luckily, we had such one vision together that's where we all wanted to go. That in later times really caused a lot of problems. But at this time, Kerry is eating, breathing, and sleeping Kansas. Okay? I mean, it's coming out of every pore in his body.
And Steve Walsh. At this particular time, it was Kerry's vision. We interpreted it, and in doing that little by little would definitely add things to the music. Some he liked, some he didn't. But I would definitely say that, yeah, this was not only his vision from song to song, but his vision as an album I think.
Kerry had a lot of pressure put on him because he and Steve had written together on all the previous albums, the three previous albums. This particular album, Steve had hit some sort of a writer's block. I don't care who the other writer was, whether it was Steve or who. I don't think anybody could have topped what Kerry was coming up with. I mean, Steve was coming up with stuff, but he'd come up with a song the same day Kerry walked in with Miracles Out of Nowhere. Well, Steve kind of goes, well, sheesh, I guess back to the drawing board. Well, Steve comes in the next day, Kerry says, well, I got Cheyenne Anthem. Steve kind of goes, well, I don't think I'll show you this song today that I've got. Steve was writing, but Kerry was way up here, and Steve was, I mean, Kerry was just on a roll. I mean, everybody that was there at the time just said, God, this guy is coming up with such incredible stuff that there was no stopping him.
Yeah, and I didn't want there to be either. At the time, I can remember really looking forward to him bringing in stuff like this. At this particular time, it was wonderful to be a part of things like Cheyenne Anthem.
From the mountains to the sun, life has only just begun. We wed this land and pledged our souls to meet its end. Life has only just begun. Hear my people roam the earth in the kingdom of our birth. Where the dust of all our horses hides the sun, we are mighty on the earth, on the earth. You have come to move me, take me from my ancient home. Land of my fathers, I can't leave you now. Share it with you. No man on this earth we're on. Now the wheels are rolling. Hear the howling winds of war. It's my destiny to fight and die. But is there no
shall pass away. For our freedom we must pay. All our words and deeds are carried on the wind. In the ground our bodies lay. You will stay.
Redbeard in the studio thanking all my guests. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.